From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Dorothy Kilgallen was a reporter and a columnist. She died back in November of 1965. She was investigating the John F. Kennedy assassination. Is she tied into her death with the actress Marilyn Monroe? In a moment, some updated information from Mark Shaw, his latest book, Denial of Justice. He's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Mark Shaw back with us, his latest book, Denial of Justice, Dorothy Kilgallen, Abuse of Power, and the most compelling JFK assassination investigation in history. Let me tell you a little bit about Mark, former criminal defense attorney, legal analyst for CNN, ESPN, and USA Today. He is an investigative reporter, author of many books. He's also a member of the American Society of Journalists and Authors. Has written also for USA Today, Huffington Post, and the Aspen Daily News. Mark, welcome back. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks again, George. I appreciate it. I always enjoy being on your show.
There is news breaking all over the planet about Dorothy Kilgallen, the former correspondent and journalist, and somehow linking her death with the death of Marilyn Monroe, and I bet you are right in the middle of this.
Well, it's always been an interesting journey, as you know, George, because I started with nothing. I didn't know anything about Dorothy other than what's my line, and most people, when I give a presentation, that's what they know about Dorothy, like I did. But as you know, I was able to get some new information when I wrote a biography of Melvin Belli, who represented Jack Ruby, mm-hmm. and that led me to writing a book about Joe Kennedy and the 60 election and the double cross and everything, and then the reporter who knew too much, and then Denial of Justice. And your audience has heard me before say that basically I owe all of this to Dorothy. She has done and is still doing, kind of guiding me along in terms of the things that I'm trying to do. As you know, just recently here, I have gone ahead and tried to get another investigation of her death. I flew 3,000 miles to New York City. I was able, through a supporter there of my cause, to meet the new NYPD commissioner, Dermot Shea. I got my picture taken with him, which was amazing.
How about that?
And then I was able to talk to him about Dorothy's case and hopefully have the cold case squad there investigate that death. He was able to give me a contact, a detective in his office, and so now I'm in dialogue with them about what can happen. What they will do, and basically I've been told I can get a fair shake there, and so hopefully that will happen, because they need to investigate the main suspect in Dorothy's death, something I've been trying to do for years. So then that kind of led me to start to think about, as I put information together for them, George, I started thinking about Marilyn Monroe. She's been on my mind a long time. I've always been quizzical about her death.
Yes.
And many people don't know that she and Dorothy Kilgallen were very good friends. For one thing, they were both passionate about UFOs.
That's right.
As was JFK, as a matter of fact. And so there was that connection. And then, you know, they would run into each other socially and all of that. Marilyn had been to Dorothy's home at parties and things. But when Marilyn died, Dorothy gave me some clues that I couldn't get out of my mind. You're curious like I am. And she wrote a couple columns about Marilyn, basically saying what a wonderful person she was. You're going to live forever in people's minds. But then she started to look into some clues that she saw about Marilyn's death. And at the end of chronicling those in the column, she said, well, the real truth hasn't been told. And I've really never been able to get that out of my mind. And so here's what I started to do. I started to look at the similarities in the two deaths. And if you do that, you really start seeing things that just jump out. First of all, both cases have flawed autopsies. First of all, they were conducted, as I recently learned, by junior medical examiners, Thomas Noguchi, for instance, with Marilyn, Dr. James Luke for Dorothy's. Noguchi admitted he made mistakes. I certainly found mistakes in Dorothy's autopsy. So that was one of the first things that jumped out at me. They both were involved with powerful men and enemies, powerful men who became enemies. In Marilyn's case, I don't think anybody has questioned the fact that she had relationships with both Bobby and JFK, and both of them had talked to her about certain things when they were together, perhaps some national security things. But those relationships were ones that she was going to, she said at least, expose shortly before she died. Well, look at Dorothy then. Dorothy had all the goods about the JFK assassination based on being at the Ruby trial, interviewing Ruby, the only one to do so, went to New Orleans, figured out that Carlos Marcello had the greatest motive to kill JFK so Bobby would be powerless.
She dealt
and then
with
what,
the, she
and
dealt
what
with,
happened?
And she dealt with Garrison, too, didn't she?
No, we don't know that for sure, and you know I don't like to speculate. She made one more trip to New Orleans, and that could have happened. But what happened then? She was writing a book for Random House, and the next thing we know, she's dead.
Yep.
So that really
yep.
bothered me. The death scenes bothered me, and they bothered Dorothy. In her column, she said she couldn't understand some things that happened. Why was the light on in Marilyn's bedroom? Why was the door locked? All of these things bothered her about the death scene. It looked like it was staged. Well, we have the same thing in Dorothy's case because she was found in a bedroom she never slept in. Her hairpiece, eyelashes, and makeup was on, and clothes she didn't wear to bed. So that really bothered me as well. Both, of course, were said to have died of barbiturate overdose, Marilyn's suicide. Dorothy, what? An overdose accidentally. And so all of these things. And the other thing that bothered me a great deal is that right before they died, all these rumors came out, and even after they died, that they were both hopeless women, that they both had all kinds of problems, that they didn't have anything to live for. Well, that was ridiculous.
Dorothy was married, wasn't she?
Dorothy was married, but more than that, she was at the height of her career. What's My Line? The newspaper syndicated column. She was covering the most important cases of her life. And look at Marilyn. She had gotten herself straight. Yes, she had some drug problems and things. She just signed a new contract with Fox for movies. She seemed to be happy in her private life, although there were problems with the Kennedys. So all of those things kind of bugged me. And so I kept writing them down. And all at once, as you know, Dorothy wakes me up in the middle of the night, and she kind of said to me in some terms, I guess, hey, let's see what you can do for Marilyn, my friend. And that's what launched me on this new investigation.
Well, and when we look at things where I say, Mark, there are no coincidences, Marilyn Monroe dies in August of 62. JFK dies November of 63. Kilgallen dies in November of 65. Come on, what are the odds of all those things happening accidentally?
Well, yeah, you're so perceptive, George, as usual. And you know, you have to wonder about that because they both dealt with the same characters in many ways, all three of them, you know. There were the underworld characters. There were the enemies that they made because of things they were trying to do, all of that. And you know, Dorothy in her columns also said that Bobby Kennedy was the last person to kill, to talk to Marilyn before she died. When she was asked by her butler what happened to Marilyn, she said she was murdered, and it was the Kennedys. So you got the Kennedys, you got the underworld characters, you got the government agencies, and they all connect the three deaths. And that's why I really feel like it's important for me to look into those. And based on the evidence I have so far, I'm going to do the same thing with Marilyn's death that I've done with Dorothy's, and that's going to be ask the LAPD to reopen that case because both of these women were brave women in many ways. Dorothy, a patriot, Marilyn, a huge star, and they deserve justice. They deserve their day in court, so to speak.
Mark, are you afraid of stepping on toes? I mean, even though it's been 40, 50 years,
mm-hmm.
Are you afraid of stepping on toes?
Well, George, you and I do the same thing in a lot of ways. You come on there every night, and you talk about the truth. And I'm sure that you get some strange emails and maybe some phone calls
so
on and so forth. But that's not going to stop you, and it's not going to stop me. I've had some very strange calls lately and some very strange emails lately from people about my car starting and things like that. But when you're trying, you know, we need the truth these days. Look at the Epstein case. Let's look at another case that's a dead end right now. The man was about to spill the beans about all the powerful people that he was involved in, all the way up the ladder And what happens? They find him in a cell, and supposedly he committed suicide. And there's here is the real connection to Marilyn and Dorothy's death. There's no investigation.
Nothing.
At all.
Nothing.
In Dorothy's death, and not in Epstein's case. What are they trying to hide here? Well, obviously they're trying to hide the truth.
Big money hides the truth, doesn't it?
It always does. And for whatever reason, government agencies, you know, they just don't want us to know the truth. Look at the current president. They still have not released all of the JFK documents. And you know why? Well, it's national security. We don't want to, you know, cause problems with that. This is 50-some years later.
Yeah.
What in the world can be the reason for that, except they're trying to protect those who were involved in wrongdoing back then? That's the only thing I can think of.
Kilgallen was on to something. Then let's add two more bizarre episodes to the whole thing. The so-called assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, gets gunned down and killed, and then his murderer apparently dies of cancer in his prison cell? Come on!
Well, you've got to be careful here, George. You're using common sense.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. People are all over the area with regard to the JFK assassination, Dorothy's death, and Marilyn's death. I think you know a presentation that I gave in Allen, Texas, at the Allen Library in November, which is right outside of Dallas. It was a two-hour presentation with questions and everything. That video had been up on YouTube, and people can find it by going in there and throwing in Dorothy Kilgallen, my name, and the JFK assassination. Well, on the 17th of February, for whatever reason, it took off. And there were 10,000 views at the time, which was a lot. And 1 week later, there were 500,000. And now today, there's more than 600,000 views.
Jeez.
Of that presentation, because people are curious. They love Dorothy, get support about what I'm doing. And more than that, they want to see her get the justice she deserves. And I think the same thing will happen with Marilyn's case. You know, these were good women. These are good people. Yeah, they made mistakes. Yeah, they had flaws. But they both deserve, you know, a better fate than they had when they
died. Let's get into this, Mark, when we come back in a moment. Mark Shaw with us. His books, of course, the latest, The Denial of Justice, Denial of Justice. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we'll be back in a moment with Mark Shaw, his latest work, Denial of Justice. It's an incredible story as he is tying in, of course, the possible deaths of Dorothy Kilgallen and Marilyn Monroe together, possibly. We'll talk more with him, and next hour we'll take your phone calls with him. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Mark Shaw. Mark, for a lot of our younger and new members of the audience, some weren't even born when Dorothy Kilgallen was around. Can you tell them who she was?
Well, it was pleasure. And it is interesting, even of those 600,000 people who viewed the YouTube presentation I mentioned about, I've gotten all these emails, and many of them are from young people. In fact, there's a 17-year-old high school student down in North Carolina who has organized a Get Justice for Dorothy, a Facebook club.
Wow.
And she's called the commissioner in New York City. And I hear this all the time because they see inspiration in this woman. And maybe that's the most important thing, both in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, Denial of Justice, and then the new book I'm working on, Collateral Damage. Dorothy is an inspiration. College dropout. Her father was a famous newspaperman, as you know, Jim Kilgallen. That's all she wanted to do then, and she got an internship at the New York Journal American, and once, you know, in those days women were supposed to be in not in the back seat but in the car behind, but Dorothy overcame all those gender obstacles and became a syndicated columnist for the Journal American, syndicated to 200 newspapers across the country.
And in those days, that's huge.
Oh,
huge.
Yes, it was. And, you know, she then became a star on What's My Line, the quiz show. She covered the Lindbergh baby kidnapping case. She covered a Dr. Sam Shepard case that became The Fugitive with Harrison Ford. The New York Post called her the most powerful female voice in America. Ernest Hemingway said she was the greatest woman writer in the world. She was, you know, so strong and and such a bold woman to do things that it was very difficult to do in those days. So she's an inspiration for young people, and I've heard from several young people who young women who have said, "I'm going to become a journalist." And I've heard from people who've said, you know, we need a reporter like Dorothy Kilgallen today with that integrity, because that's how she was. She actually went out and found the facts and then let people stop and think about what they were, like I do with my books. So she was a remarkable woman. And to die at age 52, a journalist kind of in the line of duty, people have called her a patriot. There's a guy who emails me who goes to her cemetery every week and puts flowers on her grave. So people have really fallen in love with Dorothy, and that's what has made them so angry that she hasn't got the justice she deserves. And I think there are a lot of people who feel the same way about Marilyn. Marilyn was used by powerful men, Frank Sinatra. You know, you could go down the line, and of course the Kennedys.
And Sinatra hated Kilgallen.
Oh boy, there's another link between the two women and
he called her the chinless one.
The chinless wonder, he called her. Yes, maybe he was a little bit right with that, but she wrote some columns, George, as you know, about him.
Scathing.
His mafia buddies and these bimbos that he dated.
Yep.
All of that. Well, he didn't like that, so he got back at her. One time he sent a fake tombstone to her office. They really didn't like each other. And, of course, then you have Sinatra being the connection between Joe Kennedy and the mafia guys that helped him win the 60 election.
That's right.
And it was Frank Sinatra who introduced Marilyn Monroe to John F.
Kennedy. JFK. That's
and
right.
Happy birthday song in New York. And then she was with JFK for a while, and then he got word from Joe that had to end, and so who took it up at that point? Bobby Kennedy. So there's all kinds of connections there for sure.
Well, that's right. And then, of course, Sinatra was close with JFK until Bobby got in the middle and said, you have to understand who he's cavorting with, these mobsters. It's time to distance yourself, and that broke away.
Yes, it did. And, you know, Joe Kennedy was a bad guy, and he had this dream. He couldn't be president himself because he showed affection to Adolf Hitler. So he said to himself, well, if I can't be president with all my money, then my sons will be. Well, it was supposed to be Joe Kennedy Jr. He died in the war. So now it's JFK. And I truly believe he thought he could build a dynasty. JFK would be president, then Bobby, mm-hmm. and then Ted. And so he used all his power and his money through Sinatra to get help for the 60 election. And then what did he do? I had a witness right there who stated that Joe ordered JFK to appoint Bobby Kennedy attorney general. Bobby had never tried a case in court, and then Bobby went after those mobsters, and, well, you can't do that. So there's all kinds of connections in there. But
absolutely. You've got your thumb on this, Mark.
Well, I think so, and it's all because of Dorothy. Every time I do any sort of investigation, I say, what would Dorothy do? Because she was a superior investigator. Little things that she saw. I'll give you one example. Jack Ruby always said that he was so distraught when JFK died. And Dorothy was at the Ruby trial, so she was there. She was watching what was happening. And when the Ruby trial transcripts, when they had the testimony there from those eyewitnesses, Dorothy was in the front row, and she heard testimony that what? Jack Ruby, right after JFK died, was in the Dallas Morning News offices selling a twist board, which was that little round thing that you stood on and twisted around in.
In those days, that's right.
And
that's
she
right.
said to herself, wait a minute, a man who's distraught about the JFK assassination wouldn't be selling twist boards. Now, that seems like a real small detail. But being a former criminal defense lawyer, I know those things make a lot of difference. And that's why she focused on Ruby. That's why she didn't believe his story about, you know, just happening to be in the Dallas Police Department and all of these kinds of things, which are borne out by the Ruby trial.
With a gun, by the way.
With a gun and all of that. So she was so smart, you know. She had such instincts. And I think that's why people have such respect for her now, and I hope they'll have for Marilyn when they kind of realize that we, you know, I've been able to trace what happened to Marilyn through the last days of her life, And I think when people read that in the new book, they will get an idea of what was going on in her life and why she was susceptible to those in power, why they felt threatened, just like the ones that did in Dorothy's case, and why they both had to be eliminated.
Now, let me ask you some questions about the Kilgallen death, first of all. She died of what was an apparent heart attack caused by pills and alcohol that she had in her system. Mm-hmm. Now, they say that her husband was in the apartment at the same time in a different room. Is that true?
Well, it is. And, you know, I whenever I make mistakes or I feel like I haven't really gotten the truth, kind of, you know, don't believe that I've in my books been able to do that, I'm the first one to say that I need to change things. And I will change things in the new book about who was more responsible for no investigation in Dorothy's death. And I've always felt like that it was the NYPD, that it was the police department. But recently, new evidence has come to my attention that it probably was the medical examiner's office in New York City, because I found a witness, an eyewitness, the detective who was on the scene, who has said that he got the wrong information from the medical examiner's office. George, remember, the conclusion about Kilgallen's death was that she died of an overdose of barbiturates and alcohol, circumstances undetermined. Well, I interviewed Dr. Michael Bodden lately, the famous forensic scientist.
Right, he's an expert in this.
Right, and he finally admitted to me that the ME office screwed up when they went to the media and said that Dorothy died accidentally, because when they put circumstances undetermined in there, that meant they didn't know what happened at all. And so I have a good quote from Detective Doyle, which says, "Hey, if I would have known there was anything out of the ordinary, that there were three barbiturates in her system, not one, I would have investigated." And so, you know, and it's the same thing in Marilyn's case with Noguchi's autopsy. He admitted he made mistakes, that he didn't do the right tests. He called for a reexamination of Marilyn's death at one point. So you had botched autopsies in each situation, and then, of course, there was no investigation in either one.
Now, back to Kilgallen again. So if her husband was in the apartment, this wasn't like a mansion, he's in his own room.
Yeah.
How could, if somebody broke in or several people broke in and forced pills down her throat or did whatever they did, how could he not hear this?
Well, he was on the fourth floor and she was on the third. And the butler's daughter, who I interviewed, said that her father told her that he heard two people coming in the door that night. Remember, Dorothy, after the final What's My Line show, and it's amazing how many people are watching those shows.
Oh, those, they were huge.
Yeah, it was such a big deal. So anyway, after the show, she went to P.J. Clark's. I sat right near where she was on the last night of her life. And then she went to the Regency Hotel. She met this Ron Pataki, who was the main suspect in her death. We've proven that. We know that he was involved. He's admitted he was the last person to see her alive. He wrote some poems providing details about her death only the killer could know. That's what I explained to the commissioner's office. And then we don't know. Did they spill into her drink there at the Regency Hotel, these barbiturates, or was she accompanied home by somebody and barbiturates were then put in her glass at that particular point? We really don't know exactly. All we can do is trace what happened and the fact that she died sometime in the middle of the night. Her body was moved the next morning, moved around, and the police were never called until the afternoon. And all of that happened, and, you know, they took one look at the empty barbiturate container and said, oh, well, it must be an accidental death and all of that, and there was no investigation that way. So, you know, that just shouldn't have happened back then, but I've gotten more information now about how it all unfolded, and I think we'll really be able to do. You're talking about the husband. In the autopsy report, he absolutely lied. Now, both these books are true crime murder mysteries, as you know. There are several suspects involved.
Sure.
But Detective Doyle took a statement from the husband, Richard Comer. They were at odds, kind of estranged and everything. that Dorothy Kilgallen came home at 11:30 and went straight to bed. Well, we know that isn't true through the other witnesses, that she went to P.J. Clark's, and there was a woman who was on What's My Line who saw her at the Regency Hotel and everything, so he just dead solid lied about all of that. So he's certainly a suspect with Sinatra. J. Edgar Hoover knew that Dorothy was going to, in her book, uncover the fact that his Oswald Alone theory made no sense. And in her column, she showed that. The Dorothy Kilgallen story.org is something your viewers may want to take a look at, because photos of Dorothy, quotes, all of the videotaped interviews with her and everything. So there were many enemies there.
She had not broken the JFK story before her death, did she?
What's that?
She had not broken the story.
She was writing that book for Random House. Coincidentally, the publisher was Bennett Cerf.
Who was on What's My Line with her.
On What's My Line.
Yeah.
And she had given him some chapters absolutely the night of her last What's My Line show. And she was just going to, it was a tell-all book. She, you know, both of these women, unfortunately, opened their big mouths. Dorothy was telling everybody, I'm going to crack this case. It's the case of a lifetime. I know who killed the president and why. Look at Marilyn. We have primary source evidence that she was telling people she was going to go to the media about her relationships with John F. Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy. You can't do that. They both thought they were invincible, especially Dorothy Kilgallen, and they were both wrong.
Right, and Kennedy had a re-election coming up. And in those days, you couldn't have those kind of scandals.
Oh, no. And Bobby Kennedy supposedly was in San Francisco when Marilyn died, but there's primary source evidence that I've found that he actually was in Los Angeles. But look at who benefited from the crime in both of these cases. Well, Carlos Marcello and Hoover and all of that benefited from Dorothy's death. She couldn't write her book. They silenced her. Look at Marilyn. Who benefited? Well, there are others that did, but the Kennedys for sure, because you're right. I mean, Ted Kennedy was running for senator at the time, so there couldn't be a scandal there, and they had to silence Marilyn, in my opinion, as well, and I think I'll be able to prove that.
Why was Marilyn going public? Why wasn't she just quiet about it?
A woman scorned.
That's what happened to her.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is evidence that John F. Kennedy may have, you know, look at who she was, the most beautiful woman, arguably, in the world, sexy as could be. She
An
traveled
actress.
All the way to New York City and sings happy birthday to him in that $10,000 sequin dress that you could see through, a loving that voice of hers, her sexiness and everything, and there's concrete evidence that they spent the night together there. And other times as well in Palm Springs. Well,
jeez, did Jackie know what was going on?
What's that?
Did Jackie know what was going on?
I think unfortunately, you know, Dorothy wrote a couple columns about Jackie Kennedy, and she praised her so much for the kind of woman she was that I think in my own mind she did that because she knew Jackie knew about not only Marilyn, but all of the women that were at the White House and all of that. So I think she did know. But with Marilyn, common sense, she thought JFK loved her. And then he dumped her. And then Bobby took up with her. And then all at once, very shortly before Marilyn died, the news came from Bobby Kennedy's confidant, Peter Lawford. Well, he's through with you, too. And Marilyn was in a tough state at the time. She had a lot to live for, but that's awful tough to take. Oh, here's one other great similarity. George, you remember that Dorothy's file about the JFK assassination disappeared. Supposedly FBI agents took it on the morning she died. Well, Marilyn had notebooks and a diary.
And they were gone.
And what do you think happened to those?
Poof.
Gone.
I'd love to see those, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
There's another book for you there, Mark.
Well, you never know. Dorothy will help me out. Maybe she knows where they are.
So you believe that both deaths are somehow connected to each other?
Oh, I've even gone so far as to consider at least the fact that the way Marilyn died was a dress rehearsal for the way that they killed Dorothy.
They're so similar in a lot of ways. Very similar.
They're so similar in a lot of ways when you look at motive and you look at the death scenes and you look at these other things I've talked about. You know, I'm going to continue to do my research and all of that. And the other thing I want to say for sure, and you know this, I want to praise your listeners again. The times I've been on the program, and I hope it happens tonight, people send me tips. The YouTube explosion of the presentation video, I've gotten some tips from people. It's amazing how many people around the world are still alive.
We might get some of those calls, too. Mark, stay with us. Phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Mark Shaw as we talk about his incredible work, Denial of Justice. That is his latest work. He's constantly working on some new ones, but we'll be back with your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Mark Shaw with us. Mark, the connection with Marilyn Monroe and her late husband, Joe DiMaggio, of course, her ex-husband, weren't they trying to get back together?
Yeah, you know, that. I think if they had, she would have lived. I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's such a storybook romance, and I think he really loved her, and I think she really loved him. He got upset over a lot of the roles she was playing where half her clothes were off or she did the nude photos or whatever it was. And so they had problems with that, and that's what led to the divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But August of 1962 came along, they had a close relationship, and a lot of it was because of Joe DiMaggio Jr. Joe's son had really gotten close to Marilyn when she and Joe were together. And in fact, Joe DiMaggio Jr. was one of the last people to talk to Marilyn before she died.
Oh, geez.
And so Joe was trying to protect her. And I found some evidence of where Marilyn was. It was called the Cal Neva. It was a lodge inhabited by a lot of the mafia, Sinatra, other kinds of people.
Wasn't Sinatra one of the owners, or at least at the time?
Yes, he was a silent owner up there, as was Sam Giancana, the a gangster.
And Sam was a silent owner type guy, right?
It's on the border of Nevada and California. And she was up there on a weekend before she died and was really upset at what was going on. And she called Joe to come get her, and for whatever reason, he didn't. And then she came back down to Los Angeles and all of that. So you're very perceptive. He wrote a book with a collaborator, and I've used some of that material in there. There's no question that he, I don't think this is an exaggeration, hated the Kennedys and what they were doing with her, just mm-hmm. using her. And when she died, he basically said, well, I know, you know, what happened here. So, yes, unfortunately, I think if that relationship would have gotten back together, Marilyn would not have died in 1962.
And at her funeral, he banned a lot of people from showing up, didn't he?
Well, he certainly didn't let the Kennedys come.
No.
And all of the showbiz people. You know, I found an interview with her photographer, probably in about 1955. If you look at her in those days, here's this naive, beautiful young woman, just as nice as she can be and all of that, just starting out in the business and all of that. And I just, you know, I keep that image in my mind of who she was before she got into, you know, the crazy world of Hollywood land and Sinatra and all these other kinds of people and the Kennedys, because they basically destroyed that young woman in her, that young girl in her. And her life went downhill from there.
With John Kennedy, Mark, it seems like we had somebody with two personalities. Because on one hand, he was the very polished young president. He, you know, was working on civil rights. He had taken care of the Cuban Missile Crisis with Khrushchev in a great way. He was doing so many things that seemed to be so presidential. Yet he had this other part of his life that was out of control, his relationships, his mafia connections, all these other things.
I don't think it's a far cry to say he had a sexual, he was a sexual...
deviant.
You know, yeah, and all the women and everything. But that comes from Joe Kennedy. That's what Joe Kennedy was. You know, Joe Kennedy used to say, Bobby Kennedy hates like I do. They had Joe Kennedy's personality. You know, I've run into this with athletes that I've either written material with or that I know. They all feel like they can play by different rules. And it's the same thing with politicians at times. And you know, look at the women that paraded through the White House, and some of them have ended up with mysterious deaths as well. And poor Jackie had to know about that. Also, Bobby Kennedy and Jack Kennedy had children. Look at all the children that Bobby Kennedy had. He's out there running around on Ethel, for God's sake. So the ethical part of those two guys, the moral part, goes completely against some of the things that Bobby Kennedy did and Jack Kennedy did.
Yep.
For whatever reason, they had kind of split personalities in those particular areas, and it really does show flaws in their life that you know, you hate to see in people like that, because both of them didn't deserve to die early, as Marilyn and Dorothy did. Think of all the things those four people could have done if they had lived, and they all died at a very early age.
Yep, absolutely. Let's take some calls here for you, Mark. Tom in La Jolla, California. Thomas, good to hear from you. Go ahead.
George, thank you for accepting my call. God bless you and the entire Coast to Coast community. You know, Mark, when I think about the assassination of Kennedy and the murder of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen, I think of the, well, Permindex. Permindex, spelled P-E-R-M-I-N-D-E-X. And allegedly, Permindex was a corporate entity for assassination. It was the go-to corporate entity if you wanted to get somebody killed. And it sounds like total conspiracy theory.
Like Spectre and James Bond, huh?
Right. But except that Permindex got indicted in France for assassinations of politicians in France. They had corporate offices in the New Orleans trademark, and they were like quasi-government, quasi-CIA, quasi-mafia, quasi-whatever, you know, quasi-corporate. And Warren Beatty made a movie called The Parallax View based on the Permindex mythology, so to speak. Dean Koontz wrote a book called Dark Rivers of the Heart, also based on the Permindex, you know, alleged mythology. But again, there's disturbing things like France indicting them for assassinations, you know. And they would be the type of entity that you would bring in, you know, to murder an actress.
Well, I haven't heard of that organization, but it does bring to mind something. One of the new things that I've pointed out to the commissioner in New York City is new evidence about Ron Pataki, who was Kilgallen's colleague, lover, whatever you want to say, and she shared her JFK assassination information with him. I was able to find, and again, Dorothy helped me do this, a primary source. He was a mafioso who lived in New York. He was sent to the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas to check to see whether a dealer out there was cheating. And according to this source that I interviewed, he said he got there and he said, you know, they found out the dealer was cheating, and he never cheated again. But I was interviewing him and everything, and finally, at the end of the interview, I was talking about Kilgallen and all that, and I said, did you know about Ron Pataki? And he said, oh, my gosh, yes. He said, we heard that Ron Pataki got in trouble and that the these rogue government agents, like you're kind of talking about here, government agents or underworld people came to him and said, listen, Ron, we need to know what Dorothy Kilgallen is going to write in her new book. If you'll help us, we'll help you. So this source told me that when Pataki went to Dorothy and Dorothy said, look, I'm going to expose the cover-up by Hoover of the JFK assassination. I'm going to point the finger at Carlos Marcello. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm going to put it all in the book. Pataki then, he said, took that back to what he called the wrong people. And when he did that, the way that this source told me, and it kind of gives me a chill when I say it, he said, when those bad guys, those wrong people, knew what Dorothy was going to do, she was dead. And so, you know, there may be outfits like this out there at that particular time. You know, it was a different time, George. Remember, The mafia kind of were looked upon as celebrities back then, you know, Frank Costello and Giancani, all those kinds of people. And, you know, yet they were cold-blooded killers. And so this kind of an organization would be somebody that could be called upon if, for instance, Hoover wanted to get rid of, you know, of Kilgallen, or Marcello did, or somebody wanted to get rid of Marilyn Monroe. So I see how that tie-in could come there, but as I say, I've never heard of that organization.
By the way, Ron Pataki, when he was younger, looks exactly like Robert Morse did, the actor in How to Succeed in Business. It looks just like him.
I never thought of that. I think you're right.
Look at those pictures when he was younger.
Uh-huh.
He looks just like he's still alive, isn't he? Pataki?
I don't know.
I might have to check into that. He still may be. Now, back to the connection with what do you think Dorothy was working on the Marilyn death? Marilyn dies in 62. Kilgallen dies in 65. Was she working on an expose on that too?
Well, these columns, and I'll put those in the new book because I found them recently, where she says the whole truth hasn't been told. She talks about various things happening, including the Kennedy, believing Robert Kennedy was the last person to call Marilyn. She talks about problems with the death scene. She talks about Marilyn having such an uplifting look at life. She talks about all of those kinds of things. And so I do believe that she, if she had lived, I think she would have continued to look into Marilyn's case, her death. But, of course, they cut her life short, and she wasn't, you know, able to do more of that. But, again, you know, she was a kind of reporter, the Walter Cronkite type of reporter, who took her time and did her homework. You know, she's so credible because she was at the Ruby trial. She was in Dallas. Many of these other authors, including me, we weren't there, but Dorothy saw all of this happening, and she had the best sources. And so I think your perception is right, George, that with all the sources she had and what she wrote in her columns that I have in the books, I think she would have continued to investigate her friend, as she called her, Marilyn Monroe, because she really felt like, as she said, the real truth hadn't been told.
How did What's My Line handle her death? I was too young to remember the show.
It's disappointing. The last show, November 8th, 1965, you know, those people that said Dorothy had a drug problem or an alcoholic, all you got to do is watch that show, and millions of people have now watched it, I'm pleased to say, including a lot of those that saw the video up on YouTube, my presentation in Allen, Texas. And you watch her, and she's sharp as can be. She was always the one who guessed more of the maybe some people out there don't know. It was an intellectual quiz show. They guessed the occupations of people. There's one with Groucho Marx where you know, he's a celebrity guest, but, you know, a woman owned a nudist camp or a
it was bizarre,
know,
bizarre
glass museum, whatever it was.
Yeah, or the guy made pitch irons for fireplaces.
There you go,
something.
Exactly. Well, Dorothy was the one who guessed all of them. Well, on that night she died, she guessed two or three of the occupations, including with this woman who sold cement that we have interviews with. So, unfortunately, then the What's My Line people were like her newspaper colleagues, her family, all of those people. Even today, her family is reluctant to cooperate in any investigation. Why? Why did it happen back then? Because they all knew that she was investigating the JFK assassination, and they thought if the people who killed JFK killed Dorothy,
they'll go after them.
Keep their damn mouth shut.
Yep.
And that's what they did.
Steve in Denver, Colorado, welcome to the program. Steven, go ahead.
Yes, I got to tell you, that the What's My Line show with John Charles Daly, Dorothy Kilgallen.
Arlene Francis, Bennett Cerf.
Bennett Cerf. I mean, I was 6 years old in 59, so I'm trying to think that maybe I was conscious then. But what a show. I mean, it was a fascinating show. I told your screener the reason what are you going to ask? What's your question? Okay. Dorothy Kilgallen was assassinated, right? I mean, it was a conspiracy, right?
That's Mark's theory.
Well, I don't like the word conspiracy. Plot to kill her, I like to use, or plot to kill JFK, but I understand what you're saying.
And then, all right, then what about the, is there a connection there? The same people that killed her killed JFK.
Well, that's what Dorothy felt happened. And you may not have been listening, but I said, you know, unfortunately, she told everybody in the world that she was going to crack the case wide open.
All of them.
All of them. And so, you know, that's going to get back to the people who are threatened. You can't mess with those people. I'll just tell you one quick story, if I may. When I was with Good Morning America, I covered legal things for them. They sent me to New York City. And I interviewed the lawyer for a mafia don in Philadelphia named Angelo Bruno. And we set up the interview, and then David Hartman and Sandy Hill were the hosts. This is way back when. And they played the tape of that interview the next day, and it was a huge success. And they said to me, we were really surprised that the lawyer would speak to me. The mafia was trying to get into Atlantic City at the time. So anyway, the producer called me and said, Mark, don't leave Philadelphia. See if he'll talk to you again. So I called the office. I can't remember what his name was. I called the office, and this woman answered. And I could tell there was a problem. I said, I'd like to talk to blank again, see if he would, if we could interview him. And I could tell that there was a silence, and then she was kind of crying. I said, well, what's wrong? And she said, well, I guess you don't know Mr. Shaw. He was in his car, and when he started it, they blew him up this morning.
Oh, my gosh.
You can't mess around with those guys. You can't mess around with them. They had their own, and they still do, have their own set of the way that they handle things when people don't cooperate. They basically just kill them or maim them.
That's how they get rid of them.
Whatever it may be. I will never forget that.
I was the last news guy to deal with Jimmy Hoffa. Before he disappeared. May of 1975, I was with him. He disappeared in July.
Well, you know then.
And I know what happened. And you know what? He was involved with the same players that were involved in the Kennedy situation.
Yeah. And you know, what happens, though, is there's these distortions of history that I'm trying to correct and so on and so forth. I do want to mention one thing because it's kind of a warning. I came across this kind of by accident, but I'm going to warn people about the sixth-floor museum at Dallas, Texas, in Daly Plaza. They put out advertisements and promotions and things saying it's an accurate collection they have, everything about the JFK assassination, the building has changed history, what happened there, and all of this. Well, I came to find out through the fact that I offered donations of Dorothy Kilgallen's research and the Ruby trial transcripts. They didn't want them.
Why not?
And I couldn't understand it until I visited the museum when I was speaking there at the Allen Public Library. It's a shrine to Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, my God.
If you go through their exhibits, you won't see anything that's adverse to the Lee Harvey Oswald alone theory. The exhibits, some of them are 3 or 4 years old. They talk about Jack Ruby like he didn't even exist. In their bookstore, they do not stock any books that are adverse to the Oswald alone theory. And the reason they do, George, is because if the new information, if the full story is told, that museum won't be relevant anymore. And I went ahead and put these warnings in my talk at the Allen Public Library, and I've heard from people all over the world who have said, gosh, you know, we wondered what was wrong when we went through there as well. And it affects students and teachers and all these people. I wanted to scream when I was in there, you're not getting the full story here. They make all kinds of money by people coming through there. And I'm writing an article about that I'll have published in one of the Dallas.
Great. Send me a copy of that, Mark. We're going to come back. We'll take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take a walk on the paranormal side with Bruce Olav Solheim. So get ready for that paranormal activity. And we are back with Mark Shaw as we're talking about his continual incredible work in denial of justice. Mark, there was an attorney who initially started these investigations a long time ago. He's not with us anymore. His name was Mark Lane. Do some people get you confused with him?
Well, no, but I have some real regrets there. I was working on The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Dorothy's the first book about Dorothy, and I had his name down to get in touch with him because he and Dorothy were kindred spirits. His book, I think it was Rush to Judgment, she gave that endorsement in her column, which was a big deal at the time. I mean, she could make or break a career, so that made a lot of difference. And she's one of the few people that she shared her JFK assassination evidence with. And they really, you know, at one point I remember she said, or he told her, he said, you have to be careful because we're going to, we're going to be surveillance is going to happen to both of us as you're working on the JFK assassination. I really wanted to talk to him, and unfortunately he passed away. And I wasn't able to do that. And so I have a regret with regard to it. If people, confuse me with Mark Lane, in my opinion, that would be an honor. I feel like he was a man of the truth, like you are, George, and hopefully me, who really wanted to find the facts about what happened. And as I say, unfortunately, I wasn't able to interview him before he died.
Is there a paranormal connection, Mark, between you and Dorothy Kilgallen?
Oh, it's just absolutely amazing.
Tell us about that.
You know, I don't know why, and people may wonder about this, but I think she chose me to write about her. Maybe she admired some of the work that I'd done before, whatever, but there's no way that she couldn't have chosen me, and it's almost every single day. My wife gets a little tired of it at times when I tell her that Dorothy wakes me up in the middle of the night, but she has. You know, I can give you so many examples. Nobody had ever published her autopsy report, for instance. Well, I couldn't get it from the medical examiner's office in New York because I'm not a family member. So one night I woke up in the middle of the night, and in my mind was National Archives. My wife's a librarian at Santa Clara University. We have a friend of hers that's the Library of Congress. We asked her to go over to the National Archives, and there was the autopsy. It's amazing. And the same kind of thing's now happening with some of the new evidence about Marilyn's death. So, yes, I'm honored that Dorothy chose me to tell her story, and I'm now kind of her voice, and that's why I fight so hard to try to get her the justice she deserves.
Blair in Sedona, Arizona is with us now to get us started. Hi, Blair, go ahead.
Thank you, George. Mr. Shaw, you mentioned surveillance fears from Mark Lane to Dorothy.
Yeah.
So to me, that's not just organized crime, but government involvement too. Were there any specific news columns of Dorothy's that referred to this before her death?
Yes, specifically even before she was working on the JFK assassination. Dorothy used to have they called it a science club, and it met in P.J. Clark's in New York City, which is a famous bar back there. And she had several people every Wednesday who would appear. And they would talk about the events of the day and all of that. In fact, even a mobster named Frank Costello, who Kilgallen knew, came at one point. But later on, we were able to find out that she had been under surveillance there. They had actually put an informant, a government informant, into that science club to watch Dorothy and what she was doing, her investigation of some of the deaths that happened. They suspected that she knew more about the Lindbergh baby kidnapping case than she should have. So right away she was under surveillance. But the moment that it became known that she was working on the JFK assassination, the moment she published that first column, The Oswald File Must Not Close, 6 days after JFK died, and all of that, there's no question that they had their eyes on her. Now, who was they? Well, certainly could have been J. Edgar Hoover, who we know from a memo was the one who put the informant in the science club. But it could have been Marcello. It could have been government agents, whoever. You know, they knew that because of who she was, how powerful she was, that she would get to the truth about what happened, and they couldn't let her write that book for Random House.
Mark, did the name Santos Traficante come up much in your work?
Oh, yes. Many people don't know, and you mentioned James Hoffa. I hadn't remembered that you knew about that prior to his disappearance, but there was a lawyer in Tampa, Florida named Frank Regano. And Frank Regano was the lawyer, get this, for Carlos Marcello, Santo Trafficante, and James Hoffa.
Yep.
A very powerful lawyer. And Trafficante was kind of the silent partner of those three down there, but it's dangerous as possible. And Regano's wife, who I interviewed, even talked about how she couldn't even imagine this old man ordering all of these murders because he just didn't seem like that. But he figures into the JFK assassination because Melvin Belli, Ruby's attorney, at one particular point, Regano decided to sue the New York Times because a photograph in the Times portrayed him as a mafioso when he was at a luncheon with Frank Costello, Marcello, and some other people. So he hired Belli to sue the New York Times. Well, Trafficante told Nancy Regano, Frank's wife, that Belli, at one particular point, Regano asked, Trafficante about Belli, and Trafficante said, well, whatever you do, don't ask Belli about the JFK assassination because it's none of your business. And so I have no problem connecting Trafficante with Marcello, with Hoffa, who hated Bobby Kennedy, as you know.
Oh, hated him.
Bobby Kennedy tried to strangle him at one point. So that whole group in there, they were the ones that Joe Kennedy double-crossed. And as we talked about, based on my own experience in Philadelphia, you can't mess around with those guys.
Ironically, Hoffa had two children. One became a St. Louis judge, Barbara Kranzer,
really?
Outstanding person. And then his son still heads up the Teamsters Union.
Yes, I think I knew about the son, but I never knew about
the judge.
The daughter. That's most interesting.
Yep, great person. Let's go to Philip in Miami, first-time caller. Hi, Philip. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, if Joe Kennedy hadn't had his stroke and had lived throughout 62 and 63, how would things have been different, or how would that have affected things?
Yeah, did Joe Kennedy's stroke slow him down at all, Mark?
Yeah. Well, after Joe Kennedy, and again, I had a primary source witness there at the dinner when Joe Kennedy, against JFK and Bobby's wishes, ordered JFK to appoint Bobby Kennedy attorney general. And when Bobby went after those guys, then, the mafioso, including Giancana, they sent an emissary to Joe Kennedy and told him, you've got to stop this. You've got to stop Bobby from doing what he's doing, deporting Marcello, indicting Giancana. You've got to stop it from happening. Well, Bobby was so headstrong about this that he didn't listen to Joe Kennedy. And I think that's what perpetuated the heart attack that Joe Kennedy had. And after that, he was immobile. He was in a wheelchair and everything. There's a very telling scene that I put in The Poison Patriarch and in Denial of Justice, that when Ted Kennedy walks into Joe Kennedy's bedroom and shows him a headline that JFK had been killed, Joe Kennedy sweeps that newspaper off of the bed and basically falls off the bed crying.
Jeez.
Because Joe knew what he had done. He had, without pulling the trigger, he had killed his son by double-crossing those bad guys and sicking Bobby on them. And so would things have changed if Joe hadn't had a heart attack? I doubt it, because he couldn't control his son, Bobby, anymore.
Interesting. And I saw a movie on Teddy Kennedy in Chappaquiddick, and he was calling Joe, telling him, what do I do? What do I do? And, and at least in the movie, all that the Joe Kennedy would say would be alibi.
A lot of people say that's another murder, George, Ted Kennedy could have rescued her and left her to die alone underwater. Just a real tragedy.
Strange.
The whole Kennedy family, unfortunately. No wonder there's
they've been cursed.
The Kennedy curse.
Yeah, they've been cursed.
What happened to the people in that can't live your life that way.
No, not at all. Laura's in New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Mark, the investigative work that you're doing is really great, and I've been listening to all your connections with all these people, and it's really excellent. But I just wanted to make two suggestions. The first suggestion is I was going to ask you if you've consulted psychics, and to get answers from these murders. And the reason why is that psychics aren't backroom little ladies with crystal balls anymore. They're women that have million-dollar contracts on Netflix, and they're people that George has had on his show, and their clients are million-dollar movie stars, and these mediums are so smart, and they're so astute. And I think if you consulted a bunch of them, you might get some missing pieces and some answers for your investigations. And then my second suggestion is for you to, if you ever have time or have the interest, is to take your excellent investigative skills and investigate the actual murder of the century, which is Princess Diana.
Oh, boy. All right, let me say, first of all, I have all the respect in the world for psychics and those that can connect people and everything. I've never admitted this before, but I will on this program, yes. There was a gentleman on the East Coast, he and his wife. I felt very confident in their credentials, and I was able to speak with them and talk to them about Dorothy and all of that, and they came back, and we talked, and I was pleased to say, to find out that they felt like that Dorothy, in fact, had chosen me to tell her story. She was very pleased with what I was doing, and she was going to continue to help me. There have been other psychics who have approached me. I haven't been able to do anything with that because I've been so busy and all that, but I'm never adverse to that. I think, you know, just quickly, this summer I decided I wanted to get smarter. So I read the biographies of Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and Albert Einstein. And I don't know that I got smarter, but I did notice one similarity of the three men. They each talked about the most important element a human being can have is curiosity. And I think that, you know, in this day and age, we want to look at everything, including those in the hereafter that can help us or can connect us with that. We need to ask questions. We need to find out, you know, what is happening that way. And so I haven't admitted that before, but I got some valuable information, and it led to some other things that I could look into. Your second question about Princess Diana, I've been asked about that several times. That's a tough one because, again, like Marilyn's death, it was kind of a mess right after everything happened. There was so much going on that it's difficult to find out and separate truth from fiction.
Yeah.
Again.
Tragic accident, perhaps.
Yeah, huh? A very convenient death. And why? Because apparently she was going to spill the beans on what was going on with the royal family. So you certainly have motive there. I mean, look how they've tried to cover up. Is it Prince Andrew that was involved with Epstein?
That's what they say.
You know, they're trying to cover up all of that. And so I have no doubt that Princess Diana, in my own mind, was silenced just as Marilyn and Dorothy was.
Tragedies all over the place, Mark, yet they continue to get away with it.
Well, they do because people don't ask enough questions. And I think in this political world we have, we need to ask questions, whatever your politics are. Or I love your show because what you do is you present all sides of the equation, like the Allen Public Library did for me.
Yep.
We need that. We need that these days to ask these questions and make sure that we get answers because it's pretty difficult to trust anybody anymore, especially, I'm afraid, I have to say, in the media. Because whichever side they're on, so many times what they do, and this is what authors about the JFK assassination have done and Marilyn's death and Dorothy's, they come up with a conclusion that they think can make a sensational headline, and then what do? They fit the facts to that. One of the greatest distortions of history is Vincent Bugliosi's Reclaiming History book. I talked with him before he died and told him about Dorothy's research and all of that. He was just amazed at it. I'll put it in a book and everything. She interviewed Ruby and all that. When the book came out, there wasn't even a mention
Nothing.
Of Dorothy Kilgallen,
Nothing.
Except for the fact that she lied about interviewing Jack Ruby. Well, that's you know, we don't need that kind of thing. We need to find the truth. And people are afraid of the truth at times, George. You know that happens.
All the
and
time.
Unfortunately, then they cover it all up.
Let's go to Bob in Arizona. Squeeze in real fast, Bob. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask your guest if he had ever heard that Marilyn was died with the barbiturate enema, because I have information from an old-time mob guy, used to be an informant of mine when I was on the DA's office back in the early 90s, that's how she was whacked.
Well, whacked is a good word, I think. But first of all, I would much appreciate your getting in touch with me. My website is markshawbooks.com, and my phone number is there, and I'd like to talk to you about this.
Yeah, that would be
something. But yes, the theories really are three. One, that Marilyn, yes, the barbiturates, and you know, whatever alcohol she may have had or whatever. But if you look at the autopsy, there's some real questions about that. The second is the reason why people want to look at the enemy. The enema. Yeah, and also the potential for CO2, air having been injected into her body that would have killed her, is because when the autopsy was conducted, they never found, it was all mixed up in terms of what really killed her, but also the proof was that there were no injection marks on her body. And so they couldn't prove at the time that the barbiturates may have been injected into her body. But there could have been something done under the armpits or, unfortunately, in her lower extremities or whatever that way.
Mark, we've got the clock, but keep in touch. You are always welcome on this program, my friend. So when you get some more information or the new book comes out, get back with us. Mark Shaw, folks. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com.